ниартасинга таматумани харитаояккут наалахатталанга тиллугит инуттиту хаусивунни питчутихарлунга. Hello everyone, I'm Madeline Alekerelek and I'm your last host in these amazing episodes of Words and Culture. I am an Inuk woman who was born and raised in Canada's second most northern community. If you can, have a quick look at a map. You'll spot Resolute Bay. That's far, hey? Yeah, still in Canada. A quick fact for you. My family was forcefully moved way up to the high Arctic in the 1950s from a community called Inukjuaq, and that's in Nunavik here in northern Quebec, so that Canada can be Canada. We were used as flagpoles. I was raised by my grandmother Minia Lekerelek, an ancienne pirogsatawloktuvinivunga inuktitut kisimiukharunnagami. She only spoke inuktitut, and as a little girl myself growing up, I would have to translate for her. She had many visitors from around the world of tourists who tried trekking and who did trek to the North Pole, as Resolute Bay was a pit stop. She even sewed many of their clothing because it is extremely cold up there. Long story short, my grandparents, Anansiakuk, Atatsiakuk, they used faith to survive the hunger, the lies, the heartache, and the very dark winters up there, because in the winter, it's 24-hour darkness. So I learned to read in Inuktitut from the Bibles they had, and I learned to interpret for my Anansiak by learning English from school. Now, there are many Inuit who live and come from the circumpolar Arctic. In this case, my guests and I are Inuit from Canada, and we speak Inuktitut, though others, Inukhativut, also speak Inuinnaqtun. And there are many dialects, but in these days, we can mostly understand each other. Louise and I have raised our children in Iqaluit, that's the capital city of Nunavut, and the hub for Inuit from across our territory. And I'll be introducing you in these episodes to my Inukhati. These are my fellow Inuit. They are working so hard to keep our language alive, and they're doing all kinds of amazing things, like starting an all-Inuit TV channel, and by describing what it's like to leave a life in an outpost camp to attend school. And then also we're going to talk about what lateral violence is doing and hurting to so many parts of our cultures, including our languages. But I'm going to talk to them about what they are doing to address those issues. My first guest today, though, she owns a book publishing company. She is originally from Kayaktugapik, also known as Clyde River in English. And she grew up with Inuktitut as her first language and learned to read Inuktitut from the Bible as well. Tana ukhakhatikisiyaka kayantugapi miuingertopiu yartutu khasurisuri gakitaya mangatusangneritsugit. Here is my conversation with Louise Flaherty. She's the co-owner of Inhabit Media, the first Inuit-owned and independent publishing company. But I also love their dialect in Inuktitut. So I just wanted to go back a little bit to your life in Kayaktugapik. Many of our listeners may not know that Inuit have different dialects. We have a universal language, Inuktitut. I've always found that people from Kayaktugapik have such a beautiful dialect where it sounds like singing to me. Have you ever thought about that?
growing up speaking it, I have never noticed it, that I never thought that we were singing, but only until recently when it was pointed out, I started trying to listen. What do they mean when we speak in a singing tone or singing manner? And it's probably because of our
yeah, it's really beautiful. Yeah. So you grew up only speaking Inuktitut?
Yes.
When did you learn to speak English?
I think I only started learning in grade one, because I grew up with my late grandparents, who I called my Anana and Atata. Although I also grew up with my parents as well, but I was raised by unilingual Inuktitut speakers. So I spoke it until I think we were in grade one when we were starting to learn English. And not long after, when they received, of course, mail, they'd be in English and they would ask me what this letter was. At a very young age, I started reading documents that were too advanced for my little mind.
That's amazing. I share that with you, as I was the interpreter for my late Anansia, my grandmother. So they really depended on us because they didn't speak any English whatsoever. So with that in mind, have you held on to that with a passion to create books in Inuktitut? Or where does that passion come from?
I think it comes from I grew up reading. Of course, when my Anana, my late grandmother, found out that I was able to read in syllabics, she put me in the church choir right away. So where text had meaning, so the hymns and of course the I've read all the Tusiutit prayer book. Knew it almost by heart. I could probably lead a service at a, as a child. So anyway, my parents were subscribers to Reader's Digest, mom to True Story. And so we had encyclopedias, we had books, but going to school, there were li very limited books in Inuktitut. They started appearing, but they were done by hand with ditto machines that our classroom assistants prepared for us students. And going to school and then going to teacher education and having been a teacher, there were books when I became a teacher, but again, they weren't coming fast enough. And I wanted my grandchildren to be able to see themselves in the books that I couldn't see myself in. When I drew pictures as a kid, kindergartner, they'd be blonde with blue eyes standing next to an apple tree, which I've never seen before.
That is so cute. And I think we all share similar stories in a sense where we were basically born and raised speaking Inuktitut and having learned English. But given that, I think we also noticed the decline in Inuktitut speaking and how, with what the work you do as a publisher of books, how would you like to change that?
I've been trying to do my part. I mean, it comes with challenges because, as you know, as Inuktitut speakers, we have so many dialects, and we have freelance translators that will translate some of our books into Inuktitut if they were written by educational authors, and they are in the language or the dialect of the freelancer. But unless the author submits their work in Inuktitut first, it's in the author's dialect. So I've been trying to make sure that our youth have documented published books that they can refer to, which we could never do when we were looking for terms, words, even just stories. It's very important because not with the residential schools, our parents, my mother definitely grew up with a notion that because it was drilled to them that in order to get in life you have to know and be able to speak in English. With my generation, I think that changed where we are reclaiming, reviving our language more. But then it comes at a fault where because they grew up listening to the language and that it wasn't very important to change that mindset is harder. because they almost won, right? Up to now, they still people still hear, oh, you have to learn English in order to get ahead in life. I mean, it's good that we are bilingual, but it made me realize the importance of being able to speak in my language, and my language had importance when I was taking teacher training. We used to have Wednesday seminars, and one of our instructors always our seminar topics were always thought-provoking, and the question was, is Inuktitut important? That whole seminar, an hour of it, made me realize, wait, my language is just as important because I've been brushing it aside. So since then, I've been almost like on a mission to make sure that our language is visible.
And so much kudos to you. Anyone who's working on revitalization of anything, I think, is a hero to me, because it's a lot of work and you're up against all the things that were taught in residential school, as you mentioned. But for our listeners' sake, as you mentioned, you were a former teacher. Even people in Canada, like fellow Canadians, don't know where Nunavut is, or for the fact that there are Inuit right across Canada from Tuktoyaktuk all the way to Labrador. So to try and describe in Nunavut specifically, the dialects, what do you mean when you say there's different dialects for our listeners?
Well, there are main dialects in three, four, maybe four main dialects in Nunavut. Saniklok, being the most south, is more in part with Nunavik. Qikiqtaaluk is almost divided into South Baffin and North Baffin, and Clyde River, being in the center, is a mixture of both. And then we have Qivalliq speakers, and they have various dialects because they are from different tribes as well. And then we have Natsilik and Inuinaktut. So, and even saying that each community has their specific little dialects amongst themselves, right? I'm right next where I grew up, right in between Qikiqtarjuaq and Mitimakarik, Pond Inlet. And I grew up listening to both dialects. And mine is a mixture of Paniqtuq, with my Anana coming from Paniqtuq. So you become aware of the differences, and instead of my way of saying is better than your way of saying it, you just have an appreciation. You learn to become multi-dialectal when you have an appreciation for dialects.
And so, does that pose challenges to the books you're coming up with when you're dealing with the author speaking a different dialect than the translator?
Sometimes we will, but we'll ask authors which translator they want, because we have a list of freelancers from various communities, and we ask them, does it matter which dialect it is in? In most cases, it's not, but when it comes to creating educational resources, I think different communities are wanting to see books in all their dialects. So that would be one book times 25 different variations, right? Which is a challenge if you have been given a small portion of money to do all those, which we don't have. To me, Inuktitut is one language, because we can understand almost everyone now, being exposed to, and I guess living in Iqaluit is a bonus, because it's like you said earlier, it's a hub, and people from all over are here in Iqaluit. So we hear lots of dialects among speakers. It was never a challenge. And instead of saying, I mean, I worry, because if we have this dialectal fight, nothing will progress, right? Because what you are given, you can understand. It's just a different way of saying a word or a term in this whole book that you will probably have to ask what this means. But then again, I always use the Bible as an example because our grandparents learned to read from the Bible, which was in one dialect of whoever that translator was. And nobody stood up and said, "This is wrong. It's not in my dialect." And nobody threw that book in church, right? It was used. And if there were terms that people did not understand, they made sure to learn what it was. And it becomes a great learning opportunity because you're adding new words to your mind, to your vocabulary list.
Now, going back to the Bible and the hymn songs that we all learned at our generations, I don't know if everyone knows that Inuit culture was an oral culture, whereas all the stories that we have heard to this day were passed on orally, and many are hundreds of years old. So, with that in mind, what is your mandate as a publisher to keep those stories alive?
We started off with creating books from legends because we can't document them fast enough. The people that lived out on the land are quickly passing away or passing over, coming from an oral tradition. Like you said, our language is very old when it comes to even the Ayaranik, the string games that we have are stories, so that they were told through Ayaranik as well. And some Ayaragosit figures in our string games go back to the woolly mammoth days, where there's a word for kiligvuk, which is that. And it tells you how old our language is, right? So, but we are trying to document everything as fast as we can for our future generation, who will only have these books to refer to if we don't strive to learn our language and teach it down to our grandkids and great grandkids.
I love that you mentioned naming. I mean, there's so many beautiful things about language and culture, but the specifics of naming in our culture, I find so beautiful. Who were you named after?
I actually have nine names.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And so during our the time I was born, I guess there had been some deaths in friends of our parents and friends of our grandparents, and the names, most of my namesakes are male. And so I grew up as a Inuk to a lot of our community members. I was a boy through my namesake. So I wasn't taught how to sew, how to clean skins, other than to have to help my grandmother. But I grew up hunting and butchering, and that's because of the names that were bestowed upon me.
And so, speaking of butchering, hunting, sewing, skinning, these are a lot of things, unfortunately, that many of us didn't get to learn for whatever reasons, and residential schools plays a big part in that. And so, how would you like to reflect those teachings in books? Is it possible?
Yes, it's possible. We have started creating, we have an awesome book called Caribou Clothing from Igloolik that we did with a researcher. And we have books now on kamik making, on hunting practices, on survival. If an author comes to us with a story idea, we'll look at it. Almost all of our books are educational books. They teach children, people, about who we are.
So, where do you see our language going? Where do you see Inuktitut headed? Namo, From all your experiences, how do you see the status of Inuktitut?
I think we have to change the trend. I think we have to do our part instead of pointing fingers at that person's not speaking Inuktitut. We have to start within ourselves. Otherwise, if we keep thinking or expecting someone else to speak, we're going to lose it, because we have to make our language cool. We have to make sure that our youth are hearing it.
So going back to the Bible that was written by someone who wasn't Inuk, so Inuit mm-hmm. learned to read in syllabics, and it's similar to the Cree writing system. With that in mind, what difference would a unified writing system do for us, in your opinion?
We have dual writing system. We have the syllabics and Roman orthography, Kaliuyakpeit and Kaniuyakpeit in syllabics. When you look at social media, a lot of the youth are reverting to Roman orthography. And we do have some books that are now in Roman orthography to reach those audience. I believe for people that are trying to reclaim the language that already know how to read in English, that it's easier as long as they know what EUA is. That's the only difference, because we use EUA as our vowels, right?
Can you do me a favor and go back to your teaching days or grade one days and share the Inuktitut alphabet? Can I say alphabet in syllabics for us?
I did teach kindergartens, and what I used was the ibitiki, and then
what would you like our listeners, wherever in the world they may be, to know about Inuktitut and why we love it, and why it's important to understand that we still have people that do not speak English and speak mm-hmm. only Inuktitut?
Mm-hmm. I've attended World Indigenous Conferences on Education every 3 years, I believe. We all have the same Indigenous story. There are some speakers. Again, I have come across people that have not moved forward because of their dialect fights, which is not going to stop me, because if we keep fighting about dialects, we won't progress. We're just going to lose our language. I mean, we have done a lot of work to preserve our language and our culture. I would encourage fellow Indigenous friends and Indigenous people around the world just to move ahead and take initiative instead of just waiting around mm-hmm. for other people to do it. Because mm-hmm. when it comes from you, yourself, it's authentic. It's authentic Inuit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I appreciate it so much of this conversation, and we will continue the conversation as Inuit, as we support each other in the work that we do. Thank you so much, Louise Flaherty, I wish you all the best in continuing this important work.
Thank you so much, and I don't think I have time to age and grow very old. retire, because there's so much to do, right?
That was my conversation with Louise Flaherty. She's the co-owner of Inhabit Media. It's a book publishing company. And I respect how she says that we're all going to lose out if we just keep on fighting over what dialects we should be using to tell our Inuit stories. Our languages keep us connected, you know, the same way music forges a connection. I would like to dedicate this song to my grandparents. Nakupmitaka sapililok simangituning inuanansi aku katapong anu tolok simatilugin. To my grandparents, thank you for not giving up. here is Tujat. Yes, that would be me and my cousin. We were a duo a long time ago. And Tujat was also the name of our community. Here is a song called Kayusita. Kayusita by my former group Tujat. Kayusita means let us move forward, and I want to teach you how to pronounce it. Kayusita. 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 Let us move forward. Madan Alekere Lovunga, your Inuk host on Words and Culture to talk about our Inuit language, Inuktitut. Please join me as we move forward, Kayusita, to another great interview in the next episode, because our people are doing amazing things for our languages. Atsunai!
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi. Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e minen yuji hina.
Eko se.
Kako utau. We'll see you again.
My name is William, and you're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby.
CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Uniquely curated programming by our hosts maintains an independent voice among the masses. You keep CJSF independent.